This is part one of a talk by David Spiro, RN, for diabetes educators, given in San Francisco on September 22, 2006, based on his book, Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. Feel free to download and disseminate as long as you include the identifying information. And now, treating the disease of powerlessness.
Did you ever notice how many nurses and other healthcare workers are married to cops? When I used to work in emergency rooms, we had a lot of relationships between nurses and police officers, and there's a reason for that. Our jobs are very similar, and they're frustrating in similar ways. We're both involved in cleaning up society's messes and in trying to change behaviors when the environment is set up to promote exactly those behaviors that we're trying to change. Cops may provide support, they may set limits, they may threaten, and they may punish, but unlawful behavior continues. Of course it does. There's poverty, there's inequality, there's rampant materialism, families are broken down, communities are broken down, and there's a wide availability of substances that promote unlawful behaviors. So it's very frustrating for the cops. But we, healthcare workers, we do most of those same things, don't we? We provide support, we try to set limits, you know, eat this, don't eat that, and we threaten all the time. You know, you'll die, you'll lose your legs, you'll go blind if you don't do what we say. And yet, people keep getting sicker. And health behaviors don't change that much either. Because the environment is set up to make people sick and to promote unhealthy behaviors. And in many of the same ways that it promotes unlawful behaviors. So we, cops and healthcare workers, we need to think of this in a different way. We need to think about changing the environment and empowering people to do a better job of living in it and coping with it. Here's the basic idea. We think of diseases like diabetes as a medical problem, and we look for causes and treatments within the individual who has it. But in reality, diabetes is a social disease. It's caused by unhealthy environments, and those who lack the power to resist the environment are at risk. The first half of this talk is going to be about the social causes of illness and how that works. And in part two, we'll talk about social solutions that actually work. The environment is toxic in at least five ways. Stress, barriers to physical activity, inequality, which increases stress, isolation, people are not connected, people do not have enough support, and unhealthy food. So let's start with food. A couple years ago, Mary Layton of the Diabetes Education Center of the Midlands invited me to Omaha to give a talk, and it was great. And the next day, she took me out in the countryside, and I got to see a small feedlot for cattle, Nebraska beef. And if you were an animal lover, the feedlot would have broken your heart. Animals are crowded in there with nowhere to go, no way to move, no contact with nature, nothing to look forward to. They're just packed in with nothing to do except eat. But there's plenty of food, mostly concentrated carbohydrates and meat byproducts. If you added a couple of large screen TVs and maybe some video games, the feedlot wouldn't have been that different from a lot of human environments. Think about housing projects. Think about huge office cubicle farms where people are isolated and sitting all day. Think about schools where the kids have to sit all day, or supposed to sit all day, motionless, and then are turned loose on vending machines and cafeterias stocked with high-calorie foods. The fact is that millions of people are being forced to live in environments like those used for fattening cattle, and then they're blamed when they get fat. Or when they get sick. People and whole communities are blamed for type 2 diabetes, either their genes or their behavior, or both. And while I realize that the diabetes educators are in the business of behavior change, it's valuable to realize that behavior doesn't have nearly as big of a contribution to health outcomes as we tend to think. People with less power, less money, less status, fewer resources, tend to have worse health behaviors, and they tend to have worse health. So people blame the health problems on the behaviors. But good research done by people like Paula Lance here in the United States and Michael Marmot and his associates in England have shown that all behaviors combined contribute 30% or less of the difference between difference in health between rich and poor, or even between the most healthy and the least healthy. So exercise, diet, stress reduction, all that combined contributes about 30%. That's a meta-analysis. There are many studies involved, and some of them show as high as a 40% contribution for behaviors, but others show as low as 18%. So while behavior change is important and is definitely worth working on, it's not the whole picture by a long shot. And it's also important to realize that social conditions impact people's behaviors every minute of every day. So trying to work on personal behavior without looking at the social environment is a losing proposition. I'm not going to go into the genetic theories here, except to say that the role of genes, while important, is frequently misunderstood and often overstated. Native Americans and African Americans, for example, have very high rates of type 2 diabetes, among the highest in the world. So, scientists have been studying their genes for years, trying to figure out what makes them different, what's wrong with them. They haven't found much of anything, and that's not surprising. Before the Europeans came, diabetes was unknown among Native Americans. There is no word for diabetes in most traditional Native languages. And even as late as 1930, Dr. Hancock of the Indian Health Service reported seeing exactly one case of diabetes in 2 years of working with Indians in Arizona. And if you look at Africa, the rates of type 2 diabetes in Africa are very low too. Or at least they were until Western foods and Western culture was imposed on them in many places. So the role of genes, while important, is also overstated. So if that's the case, though, what is causing these groups' high rates of illness? Well, they're living in very unhealthy environments, and they have less power to resist. It's fair to say that type 2 diabetes is a disease, first and foremost, of powerlessness, and the statistics prove it. People with the less money you have, the more likely you are to get type 2 diabetes. The less education you have, the more likely you are to get type 2 diabetes. If you're a member of a discriminated against group, you're much more likely to get type 2 diabetes. And that happens frequently because of poverty, because people lack the resources to live a healthy life, but also because of discrimination, because of history of trauma that gets passed down from generation to generation, like the things that were done to the Indians during the genocide and the things that were done to African Americans during slavery are still causing diabetes and heart disease and other health problems today, because the stress of that and the powerlessness of that gets passed down from generation to generation. But it's not just about groups, and it's not just about oppressed groups. Any individual from any group can find themselves with less power, or at least lacking the power to resist the environment, and they might get sick. People who have a history of abuse or a history of trauma have higher rates of type 2 diabetes. People who have experienced parental neglect or parental unemployment, drug use, or death of a parent tend to have higher rates of diabetes. People who have absorbed negative self-images from media or from society or from parents are more likely to have diabetes. And it's interesting to note that military veterans have twice the rate of diabetes of non-veterans. And nobody knows exactly why. It hasn't been researched, but it probably has a lot to do with the trauma that they suffered while in the military. But what causes this? What leads from powerlessness to illnesses like diabetes? Well, the thing is, people can defend themselves from the environment, as unhealthy as it is, if they have enough power. You know, if you can eat healthy in this environment if you have the money, if you have the motivation, if you have the knowledge, if you have the support. You can find a way to exercise, even though your environment might be set up to make it hard, if you have the support, if you have the power. But if you don't, you are at risk. And the number one way that I think, though, that powerlessness contributes to type 2 diabetes and other chronic illnesses is through stress. When asked about the causes of diabetes or metabolic syndrome or obesity, most people would blame overeating first and lack of physical activity second. And these are both obviously very important. But in reality, stress is the starting point and usually the most important factor. Stress is the physiological response to threats that we perceive as beyond our ability to control. The stress response doesn't usually kick in just because we're racing around trying to get one kid to clarinet lessons and another one to soccer practice. It's a response to a threat, something that we perceive as endangering our lives. Suppose you're walking down the street and you come across a hungry, man-eating tiger. I mean, I personally hate that when it happens. But you would be very stressed. And here's what it does. So stress prepares your body to escape the tiger, to run away or to fight or climb a fire escape or something. And it does that by increasing your blood glucose levels, telling all the cells of your body to pump glucose into your bloodstream so that the muscles will have more fuel to use. It also increases your insulin resistance because you don't want the other cells that are not involved in trying to survive the immediate threat. You don't want them to use up the glucose, so they shut down. They become insulin resistant, so that only the cells, the muscles that are working will have glucose available. And it increases your blood pressure so that your heart can pump the blood around faster and get the glucose to the muscle cells quicker so that you can survive. But if you don't run away and you don't fight and you don't exercise, then a lot of that extra glucose gets deposited or converted into abdominal fat. So what are we talking about here? We've got increased blood sugar, increased insulin resistance, increased blood pressure, and increased abdominal fat. This is metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome is a stress-related disease. It's caused directly by the physiological response to stress and also indirectly because the quickest way and the best way to reduce stress is to eat comfort foods like sugars and fats. Makes you feel better, raises your endorphin levels and your serotonin levels for a little while. So stress is a major contributor to diabetes. But stress is not equally distributed through society. So suppose that tiger is still out there on the corner and I'm coming down the street again, but this time I'm riding in an Abrams tank. It wouldn't be stressful at all because I'm safe, I'm in control. When you have the ability to cope, and when you're in control, it's not stressful. Let me give you another example that's maybe a little more realistic. Suppose my company is threatening to close down my job and move it to Bangladesh. Well, if I've got $1 million in the bank, and I'm pretty confident about being able to get another job easily, that's not stressful. I mean, it might be annoying, but it's not stressful. But if I have $5 to my name, and 3 children depending on my paycheck, and I'm not at all confident about being able to get another job anytime soon, the stress of the threatened job loss could keep me up at night. It could keep my blood sugars up, my blood pressure up, increase insulin resistance 24 hours a day for months. So stress is a major contributor to type 2 diabetes, and powerlessness is a major contributor to stress. But stress is not the only way that powerlessness leads to illness. People with less power tend to have less self-confidence or self-efficacy, like we say in the business. Self-efficacy means the belief that you can do the things that you want to do. Well, if you've never had the ability to do much of anything that you wanted to do, what is your self-efficacy going to be like? You might also have low self-esteem because nobody's ever told you or showed you that you're valuable. So why are you going to give the effort and the time and the resources to your own health if you're not worth it? And there's all kinds of painful emotions that come up with being disempowered. Things like anger and fear and grief or depression. I mean, we all know that depression is strongly correlated with type 2 diabetes, 40 to 50% in some studies. And that's not surprising because powerlessness causes type 2 diabetes and powerlessness causes depression. And depression is going to make it much harder to take care of yourself and change behaviors. But there's more. There's lack of support. I mean, people with less power tend to have less support, either because they're isolated or because the people that they do know are stressed out too and have all kinds of demands also and are not in a position to give a lot of support. You may have other demands that are more important than health, like keeping a roof over your head or keeping your kid out of jail. And then some health educator is going to come along and say that you're pre-contemplative, that you're not serious about your health. You might have lack of motivators, lack of positive reasons to take care of yourself and reasons to live, because there's just not enough good positive things happening in your life. And you will have an unhealthier food supply and more barriers to physical activity. So taken together, even though powerlessness has never actually been studied per se, we can say that it's a major contributor to type 2 diabetes, probably the biggest cause of it. But what do we do about that? How do we change the environment, and how do we empower people? And that's what part two of this talk is about.